You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, friends. Elliot here. Caleb and I hope you are healthy and safe at home right now. I know that there's a lot of stuff going on right now, but Caleb and I, with the help of our friends at the Broadway Podcast Network, are hosting something each week to help brighten up your day. Every Wednesday and Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Caleb and I will be hosting a live video happy hour, courtesy of the Broadway Podcast Network. We'll be sitting down with some of your favorite podcasters from other shows on the network, and we're going to sit, have a cocktail, have some laughs, and take a break from watching Netflix for the day. What you're about to hear is the audio from those video calls. But you can watch the whole thing for yourself on the Broadway Podcast Network YouTube channel. And to tune in live, you can go to bpn.fm/happyhour. Again, that's bpn.fm/happyhour. We hope you'll join us for the next one. Cheers. This is Equity One, Broadway's happy hour.
Pour yourself a drink and join us as we chat about life, theater, and everything in between.
I'm Elliot Maddox.
And I'm Caleb Dickey. Join us for your Equity One.
Hello, Caleb.
Cheers.
Cheers. I can hear you. It's off to a great start.
And I can see you. I know I'm probably delayed, but like this is going.
I know you're in your blue room. It looks great.
I know. I'm a little sporty spice today over here. I mean, you know, I'm into lacrosse nowadays.
Oh, you're into lacrosse. Okay.
You know,
I love
that. The quarantine has changed me.
Those sticks.
Uh-huh.
Welcome, everyone, to Broadway Podcast Network Happy Hour. I'm Elliot Maddox.
And I'm Caleb Dickey.
And we are the hosts of Equity One, Broadway's Happy Hour. And here we like to sit and chat with some of your favorite Broadway Podcast Network podcast hosts. We have a real treat today, not only hosts of a podcast on the Broadway Podcast Network, but, you know, acclaimed podcast hosts, social media moguls, all on their own, they're amazing. I've already started having my bourbon, so words are going to be, you know,
slurred.
Tough to find. Yeah. please join us in welcoming Alana Levine and Sam Mayer from How to Be More Chill.
Hello.
Welcome. Hi, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thanks for having us.
Hey.
This is like my first human interaction besides my boyfriend downstairs in like 3 weeks. So if I act weird, that's why.
Oh my gosh. How are you?
I can't hear you.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no. Can everyone
Alan,
else hear me?
That.
I can hear you.
Let me, podcast sometimes this happens with this low thing. Connections. Let's pop out Alana and have her come back. Now can you hear us, Alana?
I can
How's
hear
that?
Everyone except Elliot, unless Elliot, can you talk?
Yeah, I'm talking right now.
I don't hear Elliot.
Oh, shoot.
How about now? Say something.
How's
else.
This? Is this, can you hear me now?
He's talking
no?
right into your ear. Oh.
Let me leave and come back really quick. Why don't everyone start and tell us what you're drinking?
Yes, we'll start there. Okay. First, I'll start with I'm doing a Yingling traditional lager, a standard favorite of mine. How about you, Sam? What are you having?
It's funny, I forgot this was an alcoholic thing, which is fine because I'm going to do a workout after this anyway. And
okay.
I got to say, but I do have a cup of water here and I need to say something. We only use Broadway cups in my house, like from all the shows. I always get one when I go. We probably have, I would imagine, 60, 70 different shows. I probably have about 7 to 10 Be More Chill cups. And uncoincidentally, this is the one I had. I didn't even think my cup was going to be on the air. And it is, and I'm glad to show it off. And it's the Off-Broadway logo one, too, which is kind of extra exclusive, cool, Be More Chill merch.
OG.
Now, OG. Did Two River have a novelty cup, or is that there? What they don't have novelty cups there?
I don't think
because that would be a true. Oh
no,
I can't imagine. Novelty cups are expensive to produce. That's why some shows don't have them. So I can't imagine a regional theater budget includes show-specific novelty cups.
Oh, okay. Ellie, how are we doing now? Sound?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, you sound... Hi!
Oh, yay, hi. Oh, it's so nice to that we can hear each other.
Yes.
I'm thrilled.
I was trying so hard to read lips, and I was succeeding slightly, but this is nice, too.
This is way better. You know, why we don't want to work so hard. It's happy hour.
Oh, cheers. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
I'm drinking a very strange, it's an apple bourbon. So it has bourbon and apple liqueur.
Yeah.
And it was very sweet. So I cut it with half actual bourbon. So
is that Applejack? When people say, is that not Applejack? Is that what is Applejack?
Yes, it's very similar. There's a lot of every kind of distillery has their own version of this, but what I'm drinking now is an Evan Williams Kentucky cider bourbon.
Nice.
Yum.
Mm, it's lovely. It's really yummy.
All right, I have I've been ready. I'm always nervous when technology is involved, so I've been sitting here since 3:30 East Coast time, not moving anything. So this was full. When I started, I was here at half hour, like a true actress. If curtain is at 4, I'm in my dressing room at 3:30. Usually
ready at
not
half
drinking.
Hour.
Exactly. But this was a gift given to me. It has my zip code on it. And it's a perfect cup for isolation to always remember to stay in your zip code.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
Yes.
And a perfect glass for after having a couple gin and tonics, because then you can remember where you are.
Where do I live? I can show it to the cab driver, just here. Just here.
Somewhere in this one, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Where are you isolating?
Me.
Yes.
Alana, where is this episode? I live in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
I'm in my
neighbor
right now. I'm in my office, in my apartment, and I'm isolating with my husband and two children and a dog. But I'm isolating. But I also, I go for walks outside. I'm not quarantined in a way that doesn't include air and sky from time to time. And I was just saying to someone that we're just the one thing to be thankful for in this crazy time. Maybe there are many things to be grateful for, but that it's happening in the spring and that we're not in snowstorm after snowstorm and not able to. I mean, I just think if the streets were blocked and the weather didn't allow for emergency and healthcare workers to get to where they were going. Anyway, I'm grateful that the weather is on our side.
Absolutely.
I'm excited for the sun to come back.
I was thinking that the other day. If it was the middle of winter, oh my God, it'd be brutal.
On every level. On every level. Well,
Sam, where are you isolating?
I live in Brooklyn too. I live in Williamsburg. And we have this tiny little nook on the second floor that I'm in right now that is every second of every day of this quarantine, I'm grateful for. Having just even it's tiny, you're basically, it's my arm's reach is the other wall, but even just having a second floor is huge. We do have a nice roof deck that comes off of it, which is good too for working out and going outside. One benefit too, Alana, you have a car, right? We have a car and that's actually been awesome because even if you don't get out where you go, you can just drive around. I had to go pick up a computer from my intern last week on Long Island, and it was the best day of my life. All I did was get in the car. When I got to her building in Long Island, she put it outside on a bench so we didn't have to even encounter each other. I picked it up, got it, and then I texted my boyfriend. I was I'm driving for the next hour and a half. I'm gonna take the long route of the long route home. So a car and a second floor has been a total lifesaver for me.
But they're saying that because most people aren't, other than rare road trips like that, pollution, you know, they can see from like the sky drone that that pollution is down. And in the world of other things to kind of be grateful for, the carbon footprint and the pollution in America is down like 30% or something. So except
that's
for
amazing.
Sam.
Let's
keep it down. Keep it down.
Day.
Sam.
Now it's 29%. But other than that.
No, I've actually been, I keep reminding myself of that whenever this gets like hard and I get down and like long for kind of normal. Like, what a great kind of forced reset for the earth environmentally without us messing it up so much.
There's some psychological benefits too, I feel like. Every now and again, I'm reminded because, like, you know, I'm not out of work, but like I'm not having to do very much. I'm very lucky in that way and privileged. I don't have to worry, but I also don't have to do that much. And like, it's been really great to like, there's a phrase I used to use whenever I would go on a, like a beach vacation or a relaxing vacation. I'd say, I want to arrive at boredom. And it never happens. Like even a five, 7 day vacation at the beach, you never do. There's always things to explore and you get antsy, whatever. Yeah. And like, there's so many times in the past few weeks where like I've arrived at boredom, and that's probably very good for my soul and mind to actually arrive at that point where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm literally actually bored.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Am I the only one with children in this?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Alan has kids.
Alan has kids.
Yeah. Alan's like the Wizard of Oz. I love that he's like behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And he pops out and like joins when the wizard decides to join.
Oh, he just took over the whole
wrong button.
How are you entertaining your kids, Alana?
They are entertaining me. I have to say, I was just saying to them that my kids are not little anymore. They're 13 and 16, so they're grown people. And we are together all the time now, right? In ways that we haven't been because life is so busy for everyone. And when the whole thing came down, I was one of the people who was starring in a play, and the play shut down really not unexpectedly, understanding the science and the health of everyone involved, but it felt so abrupt because you're doing a mm-hmm. show and then you come off stage and they're like, that was your last show. They're like, okay. Yeah. But I had not seen them very much in months, and that was really painful, like the high of doing a play and the sadness of not getting to be with my family. So I went from longing for time with them other than like breakfast maybe on Sunday, because they were in mm-hmm. school on Monday, even though I was off,
right.
To nonstop together time. And they are so hilarious and they are so thoughtful and deep about this experience. And I have to say, I was so, I mean, look, like Sam, I'm happy to have a little nook too that I can go to and just regroup because panic sets in and I want to seem, you know, strong for them, but the unknown is scary. But TikTok.
are you starring in TikToks, in their TikToks?
Yes, I'm starring in TikToks, but mostly I decided that I am a TikTok choreographer and I'm just doing sure. my own choreo. And if you follow me on Instagram, it's Little Known Facts Podcast, I think you will be entertained. And that's what I'm here. I'm my own USO troupe. And then like, really, I realized I was sort of knowing what they were doing in school, but not, I don't know, like not really sure. paying that much attention. And now I'm like, wow, FDR, I haven't thought about him in a long time. Like just all the yeah. things that they're algebra, I'm out, but just all
Ooh,
the things
nope.
that they're, nope, that they're doing. I don't know, I get to be hands-on for, and we're cooking together and baking together and fighting with each other. And I'm learning about music, and I don't know, show tunes have been lifesavers as always for me. You can't get through without, whether it's Be More Chill or Sondheim. That's been a big thing too. Like Legally Blonde, you can't be unhappy listening to Legally Blonde. So
you really
can't. Like that.
No. Yeah.
That was a long answer. I apologize.
But no, yeah. It's perfect. I mean, this is like,
I love that.
We're all kind of navigating this like crazy time differently. And I think it's like helpful for everyone to hear, even if others' experiences are different than theirs, that we're all kind of figuring it out in our own way. And no one knows how to do do this. We're all just doing it day by day.
By the way, my son's name is Caleb, and there aren't that many Calebs in the world. So shout out to your mom.
Thank you. It's a great name.
You.
Caleb. My mom, is it a C or is it a K?
A C.
The correct way.
Yes. Correct. We're not hippie. Like, we didn't come up with some interesting, but yes. It's more biblical.
It is biblical, yes.
I love Caleb, that.
Did I see you like do sign language? Were you like?
I did. But backwards. Is it backwards for you guys? But that's okay.
I don't know sign language, but I just was impressed that right. you busted that out for a moment.
I can spell right. like S A M.
Cool.
I L A N A.
A.
Awesome.
E L L I O. T is T. Yeah.
Yes.
No idea.
You know.
Cool.
We had last happy hour we had Stephen and Dana from In the Room, and Stephen is like ASL, like proficient, like
fluent.
he sign, and like he knows ASL very, very well. That was really cool.
Right.
What have you all been entertaining yourselves with?
I have the answer. There's only one answer for me because it's about 7 hours a day of Animal Crossing on Nintendo Switch.
It's the best game ever.
So it's a Nintendo Switch game. Nintendo Switch is like the new Nintendo that one can buy. And then a Nintendo Switch is actually super awesome because, quarantine or not, because I don't know if you've ever seen one, but it's basically a little iPad. But mm-hmm. it also comes with a dock to put in for your TV. So you can play it on your TV on the big screen. You can take it with you on the subway. It's incredible. And they came out with this game that almost seems like suspiciously timed for the quarantine because it's like the perfect relaxing, engrossing, like time-consuming game ever. Like anyone who's playing it is playing it for like 7 hours a day like me.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like The Sims. You like create your own island.
Are you making worlds? Okay.
Yeah, you make your own world and you have to like buy, you have to fish all day and then sell the fish and you find things. Yes, Alan?
What's your thoughts, Alan?
I was looking at that because my 5.5-year-old is schooling me now at Switch, Mario Odyssey and other things. So I was looking at something else for him because he's gotten up. So in the previews, my question for you is it okay for like a 5.5 to 6-year-old because there's no reading? I can't see anything in
there. There is a little bit of reading, but it's certainly appropriate for a 5 or 6-year-old. It's just probably a little bit too challenging. It's this weird, like, sort of like SpongeBob the Musical, where it's like it's for adults, even though kids can enjoy it. It's sort of like that. Like, it's kind of an adult's game, even though there's zero inappropriateness in it and zero bad language or zero anything.
So you're saying I should get it to let him play it.
That's what he's saying.
Okay.
He's saying
okay.
Alan should get it and then eventually
let him play it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you have to figure it out first. That's clearly what you're saying, Sam. It's for Alan.
But cool. It came out and everyone was freaking out and I was so excited about it and I just dove right in. I've never played a video game like this in my life. I'm probably on hour like 100.
Wow.
And it's been out for like 2 weeks. I'm obsessed with it. I can't get enough. My boyfriend likes to say at dinner now that my normal Broadway updates that I have to bore him with are now Animal Crossing updates. He's like, what did you sell to the main guy to get the bigger room in the house to do this? But that's literally all I've been doing is playing Animal Crossing. So I don't want a long, complicated answer as to what I've been doing.
You know, 100 hours, and this has been like what? 2 weeks it came out ago. That's a full-time job. That's 50 hours a week.
Yeah, that's more than a full-time job. You owe money to this like raccoon on the island who like built the island, and you have to like it's a really nice system. Everyone laughs that it's very capitalism, pro-capitalism, but he makes you pay for stuff, but it's always a loan that you can pay it anytime you need to. Like, there's no rush. A lot of stuff he'll give you before the loan is paid off, and then you can't get the next thing until you pay him off. And so it's literally a full time job. I wake up in the morning, like, I gotta go get those fish for Tom Nook. He's waiting on me. Yeah, I owe him all that money. And then there's rent. One thing that's important about Animal Crossing is that it's based on the real day and time of where you, of the Northern Hemisphere, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, and the day and the time. So So like, there's certain fish that are only in the sea and the rivers in March.
Morning.
Yeah, in the morning and at night. There's That's brilliant. Things, like once a season, like today is the day of this season. I think it's January 11th, April 11th, whatever. Is a fishing tournament, and this like otter comes to town, and he like challenges you to catch all these fish, and gives you like fish memorabilia if you win. It's the greatest game ever. You can decorate your room. You can pick out your clothes. After a week or two of playing, a certain level is reached. A clothing store gets installed on your island, and you can go in there and buy stuff. And in fact, it's all set up on the internet where people design custom clothes. You can use the code to get it. And I got a Michael Mel sweatshirt that I wear around the island, like the red hoodie. It has all the exact patches on it and everything.
Yeah, so fun.
I'm waiting to find out if George has Animal Crossing. Him and I bought our Switches together last summer. And he is really bad at texting back. So I haven't heard back if he's got Animal Crossing. But if he does.
Called out George Salazar.
Yeah. He needs to text me back. But I'm hoping, I texted him a picture of me wearing the hoodie. And, you know, I think he was probably like, that fan, Sam. Just texting and stuff all the time.
Oh my gosh.
Sam, Alana, we are so proud of you. We've never been prouder of anyone.
High five.
High five.
I was gonna ask Sam, are theaters closed on Animal Crossing as well? Or is everything open
I don't
for
know
business?
If it's because it's a game that was designed in Japan or not, but like masks are readily available all throughout the island and in the stores. So, like, you can buy them. They're very cheap. You can wear them. There is some sneezing that happens. There's no virus going around, but there is, like, every now and again, one of your, like, animal neighbors gets sick and you have to go check in on them. I haven't encountered theater yet, but the thing that's happening now is you have to clean up your island and invite a few new residents so that this, like, rock star dog comes and performs a concert on the island.
Okay.
So that's what I'm building up towards. And I wonder after that if the next progression will be building a theater on the island and setting up a theater company. I can finally run a theater. I can finally be an artistic theater of a theater company.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I've never been a big game player myself.
Me neither, to be honest. Like, Nintendo Switch kind of turned me into one. Because first it was Zelda, which is like the Nintendo Zelda. Switch version of Zelda is like kind of universally agreed upon to be the best video game of all time. And it is. And then Animal Crossing came out and is in the solid second place.
Alana, what have you been playing on your Nintendo Switch?
I'm so into Animal Crossing. I have to say, Sam, I'm not, but now you've gotten me so curious about this world that I know nothing about. So that is the key to life, right? When you're passionate about something, it becomes really intoxicating. Like, I was listening to you going, I have no idea what language he's speaking. Like, it means nothing to me, but I'm going to find out.
I knew nothing. And it was actually be more chill because Gerard had one, Will had one, and Nintendo Switch is perfect for a dressing room.
Right.
Because you can play it and, you know, it's the same game you have that attaches to TV at home. And I was looking into getting a video game system. And I was like, what do I get? And everyone, like, hands down was like, Nintendo Switch.
All right, and then I got to tell you guys some of the things that I've been watching.
Yes, perfect.
And one of the shows is Unorthodox. Have you guys watched that?
No, but I've heard it's fantastic.
King, to say Tiger King
is
obvious,
it's
right?
Obviously. Yeah, everyone knows Tiger King. Yes, we all agree it's amazing. But,
yes, but beyond that, there's a series on HBO called My Beautiful Friend, which is now in its second season, and it is based on this series of books written by this Italian author who is completely anonymous. Like, for a lifetime, decades now, have been trying to figure out who is Elena Ferrante. And there are these incredible books that follow the friendship of these two young girls from the time they are 5 till 75, and it chronicles decades of friendship and politics and life. And it is the most incredible, beautiful, first of all, you just fall in love with Italy, and especially now when you're so aware of what's going on in Italy. So it's on your mind anyway, but this is like a history lesson. It's a soap opera. It's there's a lot of really beautiful, really beautiful people in it, which I always enjoy that part of it. That's great. Unorthodox is fantastic.
Here, it's so good.
So good. So I highly recommend, I think Unorthodox is Netflix. And I was one of the people who fell so deeply in love with Schitt's Creek that I watched the finale and just thought it was beautiful. Then I watched the hour post-finale. And now I started again at the first episode just to kind of go back 6 years and kind of see how it all began. And are you guys fans of that show? Do the three of you, any of you watch it?
I've watched some Schitt's Creek and definitely love it.
Okay.
So, I haven't seen the last season.
Well, you're so lucky because you get to see it. Like, I'm so jealous that you haven't seen it yet. But you go back to the first episode and just looking at it going, oh my God, they were all so, like, when you think as an actor, like, the idea that you would, in the pilot, be as completely fleshed out character-wise with like the idiosyncrasies that like Alexis has, it's all there. Like in the very first shot of the very first episode, Catherine O'Hara is so completely like, it's, you know, if you go back to early Sex in the City or early Sopranos or shows that are long lasting that we love and look at those characters with such awe, and they could be theater pieces, right? Like the level and depth of performance. To see the first episode of Schitt's Creek and go, oh my God, like they already were doing this with one day of rehearsal. It kind of blew my mind to see that it began where it ended in terms of that level. But like Sam was saying, I've still been able to do my podcast. And I, so Sam and I have this podcast that is the love of our, it's Sam's baby in a way.
Your baby, definitely our baby.
But I'm saying like, I may have a real physical child, but How to Be More Chill is also another child of mine that we co-parent together. But yesterday I did an episode with Wayne Brady for my Little Known Facts podcast, which is this other podcast that I do. And I ended up having like this, like, I don't know, Wayne, I feel like I know him because he's been on my television my entire life. And he's one of these entertainers who just does everything. I don't know. We were weeping together. We were having like, he just goes back in time to his childhood. And there's something about the intimacy of us all sharing. How often is it that you are all, other than the morning Trump one, and we collectively as a nation, or certainly the people in my life, were all stunned simultaneously. But there have been so few things where everyone is, regardless, there are no political lines right now. We are all in this together 100% as humans globally. And I think part of what happened is Wayne Brady and I are both at home with our kids, and everything has shut down for everyone in terms of how life was before the day this happened in America and now. And there's been something so unifying and beautiful. And you know, I've also been doing a lot of these fundraising, you know, for Actors Fund and different ways that you can raise money for organizations that we care about. And I know I'm probably talking a lot because will you just give me a sign if I am rambling like at a bar and you feel trapped? I can't tell. And also because you're far away. And so just go like this if you're like, But anyway, it's so incredible the way this community, I can't take the amount of outpouring of love and support, obviously for the theater community, because that's where our hearts live all the time. Yeah. But at 7 o'clock every night in New York, Caleb, you're not in New York, are you?
I'm in Connecticut right now, but I've heard about the 7 o'clock, like clapping. It's
epic. It's so beautiful. You hear people like banging on pots and kids like shaking tambourines, and I weep every night at 7 o'clock because humanity never ceases to amaze me when people's hearts are open like that. And I don't know. So in that, like, what to be grateful for, the outpouring and love of support for each other is just mind blowing.
Yeah.
On every level, across all careers and
yes. Yeah, everyone. I mean, especially like, you know, I'm out of New York right now. Caleb's out of New York right now. And every time I see the 7 o'clock on Instagram and just like hear about it, it makes me like miss that energy of the city. You know, I've been so longing for it and missing New York, being away from it, knowing that it's not. I'm in Kentucky right now with my family.
So did you leave once this happened, or were you already there when this happened?
I left. So I was in Beetlejuice, and that we finished up performances. That Thursday we
on the 12th.
Shut down. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then I packed up the next couple days and left.
Can I ask you a question? Because you might not be able to say, but maybe we can break some news here.
If I have news to break, I'll break it.
Okay. Because there's been a lot of talk about Beetlejuice closing, obviously, before Broadway will reopen again. And honestly, even though the Broadway League said June, I, for one, living in New York City, I think it would truly be a miracle if Broadway opened again on June 9th. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if we walk in with a certificate of health into any, like, I really don't understand what that's going to look like.
Yeah.
But that does mean for a lot of shows that might need more time to regroup in some way, that there might be an opportunity. Have producers talked to you about the possibility of that in a real way, of your show coming back?
Well, we got news earlier this week about before it was announced to June 7th, you know, our closing date was June 6th already. So we have played our last performance at the Winter Garden. And there's, you know, since we got announced our closing notice, there's been talk and the real possibility of moving the show to another theater, having another life. That is still very much a possibility. But I think that now it's a matter of who knows what Broadway as a whole will look like come August or September.
Right.
You know, so who knows, you know, will people have confidence to go out and sit in a theater with people? I think it's what people will want to do.
Sure.
But it's a matter of like, if that's a reality that we're facing, and who knows with the rate things change, where we could be.
Wait, but, is all your stuff still in your dressing room?
Yes. My dirty makeup brushes,
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll have to get that at some
point. Crazy.
Like, our set is still on the Manhattan Club State. Like, sometimes I think, could I just go and just do it? Like, just by myself? Like, I miss it so much.
Emoji Land is still there. Like, that's the show I was working on as I've been running social media. And the set's still there. And the lights and the rigs. And the costumes and everything. I think the actors were able to clear out their dressing rooms because it was like two dressing rooms, one for males, one for females. And so it was very easy to grab their stuff. It wasn't like actual set up dressing rooms.
But also off Broadway, we had, I think Emoji Land had like a heads up. Like Cuomo said at like 4 o'clock on the 12th, everything's done today. So I think for under 500 seat houses, they had like 24 hours notice or something.
Yeah,
there was a little heads up about it.
Because that building, the Duke on 42nd, shut down.
Oh, because like, there's so many theaters inside.
Yeah,
right. In the rehearsal room.
So they were like, "You're not even getting in." I think they had gotten their stuff though, like the actors, but that was it. Like, no loading out of anything. That was actually very helpful for the show to navigate, because like we were stuck of like, what do you do? Because if the Broadway League and the city aren't saying you can't shut down, there's insurance weirdness happening. But like once the building shut down, then that's, you know, you can't perform the show. Yeah.
It was such a weird, tricky thing, and we're all still like navigating it and figuring it all out. But
there hasn't been a lot said about the fact that like there's going to be a lot of people who didn't get that closure. Like, of course, there's so much uncertainty for the future, and who knows what's going to happen. Is Beetlejuice going to reopen in a different theater or a smaller theater? Who knows? But like, there's also just so many shows that aren't going to reopen, all the off-Broadway ones, but also some of the Broadway ones where you're just like, it's so weird that you didn't get that last performance. It's such a strange
thing. Is it weird that I walk around in my costume? That's not weird.
That's just closure. That's just finding the end.
I've been doing
Wait, what?
I've been doing my quick changes here just every night.
I do wake up sometimes and I start doing the lines like in case what? Like in case we're going to, I guess I want to see if I still know them. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
But that's when you don't have closure. Well, that is the question.
And Elliot, maybe you know more than the three of us. Like, what would happen? Let's say they do say June 8th. Let's say the world is miraculously cleared. And in a situation where Beetlejuice wasn't going to close anyway.
In the world of Animal Crossing.
For a show that is going to make it and reopen, is that like a week's rehearsal, do you think? Or is that more? Like, how do you do that logistically?
I have no idea. I don't know. Ooh. I mean, I honestly don't know what any of this would look like because it's so unprecedented, you know? Yeah. Like,
it's uncharted territory. Yeah.
Because the company is rehearsing every Thursday. That's what I heard. Yeah, that's what I heard over Zoom. They rehearsed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Assassins was doing that a little bit too. And then, like, they kept it going. And then when they realized they don't have, I mean, theaters, I was blown away and so touched that Manhattan Theater Club paid us through the end of our run. It was unclear what anyone was going to do, but because it was a limited run, it wasn't open-ended. But for shows that are like Jagged Little Pill and all the shows that are saying they're coming back or
new
company,
shows.
So mm-hmm. are they all being paid?
I think that's unclear. I think the last settlement that the league reached ends on April 13th. So I'm not sure if they're being put on a retainer, if it's there were a lot of like, I don't want to bore people going into contracts, but there were a lot of like things that producers had to like make happen for shows when they reopen. Like it's all first right of refusal for the people when the show closed. If they're going to open with a new cast, it has to be a certain amount past the time of closure. Like there's a lot of like things that have to kind of like line up in the agreement. So I think it's just case by case right now. Right now, I just think no one knows anything.
Mm-hmm. God, your Broadway Wasted was so like hilarious and entertaining. And I feel like, is anyone watching? Are they all like, this is nothing?
No, I like the contrast of this.
Or like, once Animal Crossing was done, they were like, this is the saddest
Look, here's the thing. We have to go up and down. Like, we have to, like, talk about how we're feeling and, like, what's going on. Because we're all trying to figure it out, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, we have to talk about these things.
Yeah.
Anyway,
overwhelmed by all the, like, every night when I go onto Instagram, everybody's live. Now I'm like, whoa.
So many lives.
Yes.
12 lives at once.
Literally like, wait, I don't know where, Seth Rudetsky, Michael, you're, like, I can't. I'm overwhelmed. I'm literally, like, my body shuts down. And not everyone saves the, you know how you can save the live or not save the live? So I'm like, I'll watch later. And then it's like, wait, they didn't save
Overload.
It. Yes, I know. It's a lot.
Save your lives, everyone.
Yes,
so it's Alana exciting can go back though.
I know, but don't you love seeing? I love seeing everyone's house. It's the best.
It's fun seeing people's houses. Yes.
Oh my God, that's my. I mean, the world is so accessible now in ways. I mean, this is what I've loved as a parent. I fucking hate social media, right? As a human and a consumer, it's delicious, and I feel like I do. But just this idea now, it has been such a great equalizer between fan and everyone's a fan. Like we are all
everyone's
performers
a fan.
Are fans of each other, and people who are just enjoyers of the art and people who make the art are all living together with, you know, we always say in the theater, like we can't do it without the audience. And it isn't just a phrase, but now more than ever, it is like, we're all part of the same show. Like there's the props person, there's the audience, there's the actor, there's front of house, there's concessions. Like it just is so beautiful to me the way I've told this story before, but the first Broadway show I did was with Alan Alda and it was like, that's crazy. Like even that sentence is crazy. And he was so famous to me, famous to my mother. He was someone who generationally appealed to everybody at the time. And I remember it was my stage door then was like a very calm, I mean, very stage doors for straight plays versus musicals are a little bit of a different experience anyway, yes. Unless there's a shoot.
I mean, but I would say in the past 5-6 years, there's really been a shift in stage door. You know, it's really gotten to be like something that used to be kind of like a secret and like
no, only it's part of the ticket price.
And now it's like huge. Yeah, yeah.
I would love to circle back to that in a minute because sometimes it's fun to kind of figure out like the moment that shifted in some way. So I'd be curious. But all I was going to say is I remember it's my first show. And on the rare occasion that Alan Alda went out the stage door, just because it was a mob scene, he would ask every single person as he signed their playbill, what did they do? And no matter to a person, obviously not children, but any person there, he'd be like, oh, my God, I always wanted to learn how to make shoes. Or, oh, my God, how does the dry cleaning business work? And literally want to make sure that everyone there understood that what they did, even if it wasn't televised, had so much value and was so necessary. And it was such a, like, humbling thing to learn as a 22-year-old, like, this is how to be. This is grace, integrity, respect. Sometimes he'd ask them to sign his playbill, like if it wasn't too crowded, just to really hone the point.
That's cool. Sure,
but
yeah.
So, like, that was my first experience being a part of a stage door and seeing this kind of what we're talking about now, this community. Yeah. But when did it go from a couple of people hanging out if they really were passionate theater lovers? Or quirky older men who would stand there with like an old headshot and be like, how do you, my mother doesn't even have that anymore.
Right.
When did it become, was it Wicked? Like, when did it become?
Mine was Spring Awakening in 2008.
Okay.
Spring Awakening was a big one. But I think that it all started ramping up as social media became more accessible, because then it's like, you're not just going to the stage door to have your experience and thank the actors and have that special moment, then it's like you're making a Facebook post or you're posting your picture on Instagram. Yeah. And then people are like, oh my God, how did you meet this person? And they're like, it's the stage door. And then it becomes this kind of like social currency.
I always say, thank God that social media did not exist when I was a rent head in 1996.
Thank God.
I would have been put in jail. I would have been blocked by somebody. Alana, P.S., it's coming into focus all of a sudden, 40 minutes into this, that's a Yorga Man Charlie Brown photo behind you, which I didn't even realize at first.
Yes, it's the book report.
That's another guy.
This is my little wall of, like, memories of Broadway shows that I've done. It's very modest and just for me, but sometimes it's nice to remember.
I have a very vivid memory of talking to you outside the Your Good Man Charlie around stage door.
Really?
Just being starstruck out of my mind, freaking out. You were very nice. I remember that. I have no idea what we talked about.
Well, when that's like Alan Alda and Anthony Rapp are sort of the same person. When you have Anthony Rapp at the helm of something, and he, I mean, I know there wasn't social media during Rent, but I do know because I did Charlie Brown with Anthony, he went from the London production, so New York Rent, London production of Rent, and then Charlie Brown. So all of his fans followed him. You know, the Rent fans came to Charlie Brown. It was the greatest combination of like young girl skaters and, you know, Rent fans. But
Alan is going to bring up a picture really quick, and I and then we'll get back to
God.
It. But that's
my
Elliot.
God.
That's Elliot in Charlie Brown. Brown in high school, blonde buzz cut, woof.
Yes.
Anyway,
and
Alana, do you even know that I was in Your Good Man Charlie Brown twice in high school? Linus and Schroeder.
Were you Snoopy? Oh, you were Schroeder. I would have sung to you on the piano.
Linus
that
was my claim to fame. Linus is like what made me who I am, because like it was almost like I came out as a person. Like it was the first time ever like girls were like into me because I had done such a good job performing My Blanket in Me. So like launched my whole like love of theater. And then two years later, this is the best. I was in a community theater production. I grew up in rural Georgia that was rehearsed in a florist shop because it was so just like rinky dink that like, and
that's
they
awesome.
Had a Schroeder drop out last minute. So they had me come and do it. I mean, this community theater for free. all the other, right. I was 16, 17. All of the other characters were adults, like 40-year-old people. So like my Lucy was like 40 and I was like 16. Very weird. Very weird. Performed in like one of those like old converted movie theaters that are like now community theaters. So because of those two productions and then falling in love with the Broadway production with you and Anthony, like I know every word to Your Good Man, Charlie Brown. It's like one of the like five shows. Like I know every word, every note, every nuance. Like it's a, I know that show in and out.
I think it's one of the, I don't have the stats on this, but it really is one of the most performed musicals and has been
forever.
For 25
It's like
years.
So great to perform, I love it. But like also really good. Like that's what makes it so awesome. That like you can easily perform it and the audience still really enjoys it because it's a really good show.
Yeah.
Those songs are bangers. Last year, 54 Below did a concert of songs from the show, and they asked me to sort of host the evening, and I realized it was the first time I had been in the presence of these songs sung live by one beautiful Broadway performer after another, and they, as just individual songs, I mean, Happiness, you can't ever not listen to that song and weep, right? But it was really incredible hearing those songs out of context and how it's what you were saying, like Clark Gessner and then Andrew Lippo with his additions to the show when we did it. They're really beautiful, great. The Kite song. I mean, there's just so many songs that just move me deeply. So anyway, I remember you, Sam.
Oh, you do.
Well, Speaking of shows that really speak to people of all ages, young and older, let's like talk about How to Be More Chill. I mean, if you've been living under a rock, Be More Chill was a musical that was on Broadway this past season, preceded by an off-Broadway run, preceded many years ago by a run in New Jersey, and is kind of the Cinderella story of the fans demanding that what they wanted got to the Broadway stage. So that story is, you know, has been told and is really exciting, but what inspired the two of you to do this podcast about Be More Chill? And what was your first experiences where you were like, oh, this is something really special?
Well,
we'll start with Sam.
It, it sounds so trite, but like we both really are such big fans of the show. Like we are, Alana and I, as a producer of the show, and then Alana as like a Broadway star, both consider ourselves as hosts of How to Be More Chill fans first. Like, which sounds so just like silly and like what anyone would say about anything they're passionate about, but it's like so true. Like I worked with those people every day. I was at, I think like over 95% of the shows because I ran the VIP room afterwards. And still to this day, like I get nervous and excited about the idea of like texting with George or talking to Will Roland or like thinking about them because I truly am that big of fans of them. And Joe and his music and Joe Trace's lyrics and just that the whole experience. I don't know if you guys know, but I have a Be More Chill tattoo, which is the address of the Lyceum.
Oh, cool.
Right above my rent tattoo, which is the address of the Nederlander.
Oh, that's so cool.
The Be More Chill tattoo is the address of the stage door on 46 to signify working there versus the entrance on the front. But I think that's what did it. But Alana, tell them the Will Roland intro story.
So I will, ditto to everything Sam just said, other than I didn't run the VIP room, but I would have had I not been doing something else. I met Joe. It's so crazy. I did a play with Ben Platt the year before he got Dear Evan Hansen. So so I knew him pre Dear Evan Hansen, and he and Will Roland had done a summer stock production of The Black Suits at the Barrington Stage Company, which is a play that a musical that Joe Iconis had written. And so I met Will through Ben and Joe through Ben the summer before Will and Ben ended up doing Dear Evan Hansen in Washington, D.C., and then obviously coming to New York with it, and the rest is history. But I remember seeing this play. I was not familiar with Joe Iconis yet. I hadn't gone to the Christmas spectacular that he did every year. Sure. I had no idea that I was about to enter this world of a composer that would be so special to me. And then when you meet Joe Iconis, he's just one of the most, I guess, warmth, that's the word that comes to mind, and generous. Aside from his talent, I am such a champion of him as a new generation of composers. But what has been so clear to me is what has also been so special is his heart and generosity. And when I got to see Be More Chill, in some ways it reminded me a lot of Your Good Man Charlie Brown, where there were these characters being played by people in their 20s and 30s, but representing children or high school students in this way. And somehow the message of being yourself, and Charlie Brown and Will's character, in Jeremy here in Be More, there was something about these two shows. Obviously, Joe writes in a whole other genre of music, but the heart of it really took me back to what it was to be a part of a show where parents and kids had this experience together. And I am a musical theater lover from the day I came out of the womb, just really addicted to listening to musicals. So I'd met Will originally because of Dear Evan Hansen, and then came to see him in it at the Signature. And that's where I met George. And because I had this other podcast, they all started coming on Little Known Facts, and we became friends. And anytime I could host a live event, what I saw, and you talked a little bit about the Cinderella story, for the one person who doesn't know, the music, the album got recorded by Ghostlight Records after the show had been done at Two River in New Jersey. It is a rare thing for a small regional production to get a cast album. But Ghostlight, Kurt Deutsch, and the people there understood this is really special. That album got downloaded and streamed, and all the words the people use to explain what it is when you get music off a computer or your phone, as opposed to what I used to do, which is hold the cast album in my arms, in my bed, and read the liner notes, and millions upon millions of streams. And that's what gave producers courage to go ahead, even though the reviews were not as remarkable as they should have been. Social media, word of mouth, and this album just blew off the the virtual shelves, as it were.
Yeah.
And yeah. I wanted to do anything I could to help bridge the gap between ticket sales in some ways and the longevity of this show, but also understood what it was to not get to live in New York and see it and know that any access, George Salazar in particular, and Joe and Lauren Marcus and certain cast members were unbelievably generous on social media in sharing as much as they could. Sam was an incredible chronicler of the life of the show, not just the show, but behind the scenes, and granting, he was like a Make-A-Wish Foundation. Like, he would get really special kids opportunities to come and meet their heroes. And the whole world is Be More Chill. I feel like I'm talking a lot again, but again, no, it's great. Go like that. The whole community was just extraordinarily generous. So I wanted to find ways to intimately converse with all of the cast members who I knew would be willing, so that if you weren't one of the lucky kids who lived in New York or who had parents who could fly you from wherever you lived, most of us live theater through YouTube now. We don't have access. So when I decided, because podcasting is something I had done for a couple of years and was something I understood, I talked about it with Will, and he was like, Sam, you got to talk to Sam. Talk to Sam. Like, that was it. He was so annoyed. He's like, I've now said it four times. literally, it's like, do you not understand? I was like, no, I just had a couple more questions. He's like, nope, call Sam. And he knew. And Sam and I had met very briefly, but not just at the stage door 20 years ago, but because we were both now living in this world of promoting the thing we loved and trying to get it accessible to as many people in the world as possible.
We also decided to call it How to Be More Chill, to chronicle that story. I felt nervous that it wasn't going to be captured in real time. I mean, everyone knows the Jen Tepper book is inevitable. That's probably coming in 10 years the full documented history of every single moment. But in the meantime, I wanted to be sure that we captured some of that. And like had that story documented because it's just the most incredible story of how that show got to Broadway. You know, how to be Marcella is the name kind of does sound cool, but it really actually was chosen because like we really wanted to describe like how that happened. And like I have like 10 consulting clients at a time of like new musicals who are literally just asking me, paying me to answer the simple questions of like, how did that happen? Let's try to replicate.
Yeah,
right.
And so I just wanted to document that. And I think Alana and I are pretty proud of our record that I think after 11 episodes, might be 12, I think almost every single person has cried on their episode, which is cool.
the Barbara Walters of podcasters.
Yeah. I mean, George's is episode 2 and it's extremely long, like 2 hours. And he cries for about 65% of it.
Oh,
it's so beautiful, and that's his heart, and that's what this show not just means to them, but I think it means there's something totally good about every aspect of this show. And obviously the message, you know, Ben said it in his Tony speech, like, be yourself, right? Like what the gifts of that, whether you feel them today or in the future, like that's it. But I do think it was a show, not to mention just the vocal talent of all of those people, the comedic talent. I mean, they're really special actors. This next generation of musical theater actors, when I think of that cast, when I think of Leslie Margarita, like when I just think of these people who are you know, there's Shoshana Bean and Jessica Vosk and all of these people who sort of, and Stephanie Block, like there's just all these communities. And then there's Kelly O'Hara, who's kind of the grown, like it's just wild, but generationally to see, you know, the women that were in this show, you know, when you guys talked about divas in your other live with Broadwasted, not diva with the negative connotation, but diva gracious and
we love,
talent that is inexplicable, and just these unique talents that will be, diva means like long lasting. In a way, there's not like one hit wonders. You know, it's just an extraordinary thing. So it's been a present to me, A, to get to know Sam really well. Life is so busy, and we ever so often, you know, we didn't know each other intimately. We both went into it because Will was our matchmaker and said we should, but it could have gone all sorts of ways. You know, doing this, it's such an partnerships are so intimate, and you know, these are labors of love, these shows. We are not getting rich doing these shows.
we're getting poor, in fact.
I always say when I'm in a play, my babysitter is making more money than I am, and I'm happy for that. but like I have this work husband that I miss terribly right now. One of the real hardships is it's great that we can do these virtual things, but I miss being in the room with someone whose heart is as good and big and passionate as Sam. So that's, you know, but we are going to have conversations with London cast members and Chicago cast members. And the beautiful thing is everyone has time to talk about this thing. And it's, and how to be more chill. There is a sort of double entendre in it. It is also, what are the values and lessons that one can take from these artists and this show and have them in our own lives. So it kind of has worked on a lot of levels.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, when a Broadway show opens, it's a miracle, no matter what, how much money it has behind it or how much name recognition a title has. Any show that opens on Broadway is a miracle. And if it's finds success, it's an even bigger miracle. And if it doesn't, then it's, you know, it's still miraculous. And something like Be More Chill is its own special miracle that defied so many odds to mean so much to so many people and do it on the biggest stage that it possibly could. And it's still
growing. And the communities, you know, the communities that were built when you talked about like fandom and stage dooring and social media and Spring Awakening, not only was it an opportunity to take pictures of yourself with whoever you were then posting, but finding people who loved it as much as you did. I mean, Broadway Con
community,
you know, right? There are these worlds built of, you know, the cosplay around Be More Chill is really like Yeah. Second to none. But I do feel like that show has communities globally that people connected to. And now we haven't even talked about like this new thing of fan art. Like,
Because let's do six more hours of this. This is what I would like.
I know this is so hard.
Like I have about 1/6 of the way through of the stuff I want.
Can we do this? Are you guys busy tomorrow at 4? Is that what this is now? I've never been happier. And no, I was like, guys, mom, I have a really important from 4 to 5, like really important. Like no one can bother me. Have you seen not one knock on the door, not one, not one maybe not. A peanut butter and jelly, like so
I love it.
I avail.
Oh, you're right. I mean, the way that fans can find their community and interact and also make their own, you know, art that the show that has inspired them or the things that inspire them to create something as well. Like it's just a part of a circle. Like we're all putting things out there to inspire people in different ways. And then they get to share what they create much easier through social media and all of those things. It's definitely like it's a really positive thing about social media is the kind of community that people can build.
And also just to shout out to the Broadway Podcast Network, which is why we are all together right now, that there's this place, another community where everyone, like where we are all building these podcasts and content because we are all sharing. Like, I'm so excited to know you guys now. And that wouldn't have happened without Broadway Podcast Network in this format. So I'm just that Alan and Dory created yet another home for us to kind of settle in and share this common love for theater and what it means to people. I've been so, I don't know. I didn't know that would open yet another door.
It's also really fun to be on a Reply All with Ramin Karimloo and Donna McKechnie.
Yes.
I love my inbox popping up like Ramin Karimloo being like, yes, great. Like, okay, normal life. And Donna McKechnie being like, awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, the Donna McKechnie one got me too. I was like,
Caleb and I, when we saw her, we were like, ooh. We were like,
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Do you mind? Do you have time for us to do a few segments? A little segment in a game?
Are we on a time crunch?
Is that okay?
What time is it?
It's 5:01.
Can we do like 15? Is 15 minutes enough for you? Because I have to do another thing. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Guys, a lot of Instagram lives going on.
So good.
I got it under 5:30. Okay. You
gotta go.
All right. So on our show, I collect musical theater t-shirts and I do a segment where I review pieces of theater merchandise against each other in a versus format and choose a winner. So it's time for this week's Merch Madness. Hit it, Alan.
Maybe.
Totally didn't have this ready. Totally didn't
Alan.
Have it ready.
He's folding his laundry. He did his laundry.
It's laundry day.
Prices for Animal Crossing.
And play it.
All right. Well, go ahead, sing it.
You have to download it. Okay, here, I'll just do the segment and then we'll close with the amazing theme song video. It's like you're trying to make it a visual medium anyway. All right, so I'm doing, in honor of Alana and her iconic involvement with Your Good Man Charlie Brown, I'm going to review some more shirts from shows that both grown and young audiences have enjoyed together over the years. So here we go. We're going to start with a shirt from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Now, this is a shirt I wore a lot to teach masterclasses in. And this has like a little pocket with a golden ticket in it. It's gold foil. It's very shiny. It's super cute with a little Wonka on the pocket. The logo is on the back here. Mm-hmm. I like this shirt. I like the purple. It's a good like casual cotton. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a lot of wear out of it. And it, the foil is still intact after years of washing it. There's no cracking.
Amazing.
I like the really unassuming logo too. It's like the perfect size.
Yeah.
Not too big. Yeah, but like there. Cool. It deserves to be there, but like
I like a secret. I like a secret show shirt sometimes, like that looks like it's just like a, you know, Urban Outfitters graphic tee.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My second offering today is from Seussical the Musical. This is from the national tour when I saw it here in my hometown of Lexington, Kentucky. This has really had some wear and tear. I mean, you can see the cracks in the paint, but this paint. But this is a true vintage shirt from like when I was in probably third grade, and it still fits. And I wear this all the time. And in no question at all, these are two shirts I wear a lot.
So you like purple?
I love purple. My hair was recently purple. I love purple.
Nice.
I love this shirt because of the foil accents, because of the pocket, because of the secret show shirtness. But on nostalgia factor alone, the winner of this week's Merch Madness is my Seussical the Musical shirt.
Congratulations.
Yeah. It's a no-brainer. So congratulations. Can we play out, Alan?
It is uploaded and he's processing. StreamYard is still working.
Oh, Alan.
So, Ilana, tell us about your most embarrassing moment on stage.
Which one? There's so many equally. First of all, my son played Horton. So I just want to say he did one musical, Seussical Junior. Uh-huh. And also, again, that show is killer. Those songs,
so
Alone
good.
In the Universe, if you want to like really go to sleep weeping, just play Alone in the Universe before you go to bed. It's supposed to be like...
Wait, I have a dumb question. Who wrote Seussical? It's like a hole in my musical theater.
Aaron's and Flaherty.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. I had a feeling, but I wasn't positive.
No, you know how much I respect someone who is willing on a Broadway podcast to say, I don't know.
I have random polls of knowledge because the Seussical was part of my Broadway dark years. I talk about this all the time.
Sure.
Basically like the 2000s, like 2000 to 2010, somewhere around there. Like I didn't see anything. I missed out on so many things. I was like super heavy in The Rent and Your Good Man Charlie Brown. And then like the whole 2010s, just like I was doing other things. I miss Spring Awakening. I miss American Idiot. I've never seen Next to Normal. I don't even know what it's about. And like
it's about like this really happy family.
Hilarious.
Yeah, like, and they live. They're next to normal. Like they're almost normal.
But anything 2011 or beyond, quiz me. I'll get an A plus.
Just tell you though, and because I did a series for them, I have like a code so you can be my guest. There's the most amazing doc about American Idiot. On the making of that show from on the Stage Network, this Broadway streaming platform. Mm-hmm. And it is, I love documentaries so much. And Sam, you will love it.
Is Gerard prominently featured in it?
Of course, everyone's in it. But you have Green Day, you have Michael, like the whole story of how they agreed to let them, they had to basically do the entire musical as an audition before they had permission to actually, but it is.
Wow.
And John Gallagher Jr. and just all of these extraordinary. Anyway, you're going to love it, Sam Aaron. I'm excited that you brought it up because that's something I can help you with. On the night that Lincoln Center was coming to film You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And I'm now outing myself. And if anyone can ever go to Lincoln Center Library again in the world that becomes normal again, I, you know, if you listen to the cast recording, you understand that Michael Mayer saw Lucy as a comedic character. Many people could have played that role who are divas in terms of their vocal talents. But he really saw me as that character and would not take no for an answer. So I'm just saying, I never pretended to be a singer when I got hired to be Lucy. There was no false advertising. He hired me. However, what that meant is I was in a Broadway musical without any singing background at all. And so on the night that Lincoln Center formed, I mean, there are other things where like I missed an entrance or my dress got caught on doorknobs. But this was when I said, you have that moment in You Have the Distinction to Be in the Doctor and Me song. Nothing came out. So I went like this. You, because I had was having vocal trouble. And they said, you have to come in tonight because they're filming it for PBS. And they were like, don't worry, you can mark it. But I didn't know marking meant like just a gentler version. I thought marking, it's like when you lie and say you've waitressed before and they say 86 salmon. And you're like, wow, that's a lot of salmon to sell. And you don't know that 86 means there are no more. That was my first waitressing story. So I thought marking meant like, don't sing it. Because you don't want to lose yourself. And I'll just never forget Anthony's looking at me like, what's happening? And I'm marking it. So
your mic went out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Blame it on the sound booth.
When that public library opens, they're going to find me camped out front with a sleeping bag. I need to be the first person in there and be like, send me right to the You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown archive.
So that was embarrassing on so many levels, Alan, like not knowing the lingo of like the world you're living in, which is now ask me what marking means. I know now.
Speaking of blaming things on other people, Alan, can we get that video?
And then we're going off after this. This is the closing.
And then we have one more segment.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Aim. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a great video. Okay. Here we are.
All the drama to arrive at. That was very cool.
All right. It's time for a game. Ready?
Yes. Okay. So this one is called Back in My Day, High School Edition. Okay. So what was your high school's name and their mascot?
Lakeview Academy, and we were the Lions. We were the Lakeview Lions.
Okay. Alana, high school and mascot.
I don't know the mascot. I could tell you about like shows that were going on there, but I know they had sports. I could look it up really quickly, but
no, it's cool.
It's not worth it. It's fine.
But that just lets
That's
you
a better know answer.
Who went? There were sports. No, don't care. Went?
Okay.
A mouse. It was a mouse.
A mouse. The fighting mice.
What was your high school car that you drove? What car did you drive in high school?
My dad was a mechanic who liked to work on cars. So his favorite thing was to like fix up a car that barely worked and make me drive that, which was awful. And meant that I had like 7 or 8 of them because they would be on their absolute last legs and he would make it to where it would at least like go to school for it and back for a couple of weeks. And it was embarrassing and terrible. They were always like clunkers. My very first car, which I did have for a few months, was a very cool 1975 Jeep. I'm not that old. I'm only 40, but I was in high school in 1997. So to have a 1975 cool, like old, like army Jeep was neat, but it was a stick shift, which learning to drive on a stick shift is obviously very hard, but especially when you're high school, the main exit is up a giant hill with a red light at the top. Every day, like that's what I would do. So that I had a T-top Camaro, the car that I had for like probably the longest was probably my whole senior year was a cool little Nissan Sentra. I don't know if you've ever seen those Nissan Sentras where the handles are inverted. Like you, the handle you reach into the door and pull out. It's hard to describe.
Okay.
Like it's very cool.
Oh.
But that I got that car that was like, you know, a functional car that I knew was going to last until I moved away to New York College. And that's the one I enjoyed the most because it wasn't like a clunker that got me 10 feet before I had to call my dad, who would be like, all right, I'll come get this car that he tried to fix.
What about you guys? What were your high school cars?
I had a
Dodge Caravan.
A 98 Honda Accord.
Mm-hmm. Wait, isn't a caravan a van?
Yes. Yes, it was a van.
How did you have a van?
Because there was five kids.
Oh, it was your parents' car, and they you're talking about your parents' car.
Yeah, and but I drove it to school.
Okay.
Got it. Got it.
Okay. So after school, you came home. What was the snack that you would eat when you got home?
Ring-dings, and I would watch General Hospital.
Religiously.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I would try to leave school. It started at 3, and I lived pretty close to my school. So I pretended that I had a 2:50 dismissal so that I would be home for Luke and Laura at 3 p.m. And I would have ring-dings and all Drake's or Hostess, really healthy. Yeah. Or so popcorn, good. Like we'd make popcorn sometimes, but ring-dings, yodels. Did you guys eat any of that stuff?
Yeah. Twinkies, ho-hos, all of that.
Delicious. Oh, Twinkies? Mm-hmm. So good. Yeah. So good.
I don't remember what I ate, but I definitely drank way too much orange juice and I still have that very bad habit. Like I can drink a gallon of orange juice a day. And I think it comes from after school, like drinking half or 3/4 of a gallon for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
I drank orange soda, Sunkissed.
Yum.
So many, like 3 or 4.
Mm. I had an Orangina recently and it was delicious.
Love
I highly
soda.
Recommend. And if you add a little, anyway, no, even just on its own. For you kids at home, you don't need to add anything to it. It's perfect.
This is happy hour.
I have to go. I am so sad because you are the most fun to be with. And I really wish, I'm not kidding, we could do this every day.
No, it's okay. We'll wrap up. Well, tell listeners where they can find you on social media one last time.
Well, our podcast has an Instagram, How to Be More Chill. That's our handle. We don't have a Twitter in How to Be More Chill doesn't have a Twitter. So it's at Alana Levine to reach me and Sam can speak for himself.
I'm at Yes Broadway on everything. For a long time on Twitter, it was Yes B-Way, but I got Yes Broadway spelled out. So it's just Yes Broadway across the board everywhere.
Great.
YesBroadway.com, Yes Broadway, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
And if you want to find me, just go to for my TikToks.
Oh, I want you on TikTok.
Little Known Facts Podcast.
Great.
Oh, you are on TikTok. You do have it?
You'll see. I don't want to spoil the surprise, but it's just a little it's a little dessert for all of you when you finish here today.
Stay tuned. You can find our podcast at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and Facebook and on Twitter at @Equity1_.
And send us an email at equityonepodcast@gmail.com. You can find Ellie and I at our handles right here.
Here.
Our names.
And tune in next Wednesday where we will be having happy hour with Call Me Adam. Thank you all so much. And cheers. Happy Saturday.
Bye.
Cheers. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage.
and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.